Now we're going to start, we've linked more with Kandinsky in terms of abstraction. Now we're going to link more with Wright in terms of organic. Now we're going to have a triad. We're going to have Kandinsky, we're going to have Moore, we're going to have Frank Lloyd Wright, and the old Hermetic principle, the three calls out for the fourth. Who's the fourth? We're the fourth. We are the fourth. The fourth is poetry. And for us, our haiku assignment. It's one thing to use examples, good examples like Moore and Kandinsky and Wright. It's a whole other order of intelligence. It is a strategic order of intelligence to link them together in a developmental idea which calls forth our own activity to complement it and complete it into a higher synthesis. Sorry to use a Hegelian term, but it's quite accurate for what happened. Hegel was occasionally right. In this case, he was right on. Our own activity is called forth by the realization of the idea. It's the essential trigger in consciousness coming to its own self. To realize that your activity can, I have to use a metallurgical term, can anneal itself to a powerful idea so that that idea becomes a part of your life activity, and your life activity energizes its structural capacity of projection and amplification from the idea. It's the old humanistic thing watered down in the 19th century to there's no thing stronger than an idea that has come into its own time. That's the watered down version. There's nothing stronger than an idea whose time has come. But the Renaissance formulation was much more correct. There's nothing more protean than a man who has the right idea and the life to be able to use it. Then you really have something. The idea is nothing until it's made real by someone who can use it. Then you've got the tool in the hand of the maker. And when you put the right tool in the hand of the maker, you have a new cosmos. That's what really can come out of it. Then you have what William Blake showed, that beautiful protean image, conscious image of God with the calipers. Only the calipers are just his thumb and forefinger reaching down, but the light extending from the thumb and the forefinger are the calipers. Designs by his radiant reality the forms of the real. So here we go with Neumann just for a few more paragraphs. Whereas the mother-child motif was, quote, spiritualized, in a way typical of the trend towards abstraction, the transformation, and notice now that abstraction is a spiritual process. Do not think of abstraction as a reduction process. It's not that at all. That's a phony psychology that says abstraction is a reduction, is a mechanical reduction process. That's stupid. And to associate abstraction with mechanical reduction is the essence of demonic evil in our time. It makes the spiritual process itself suspect. And that's got to go, because that is incorrect in a demonically flawed way. That is not true at all. The book is called Concerning the Spiritual in Art. It's about abstraction. The difference between mathematics and arithmetic is that mathematics is an abstract order. Is the mind of God demonic because participates in mathematical relations effortless? No, not at all. the truth is that the spiritual takes place in an abstract mode. That's how the beginning of the radiation from the hidden to the manifest occurs. Occurs abstractly. Thought, consciousness, life, all of the great elements of the real occur in their first movements abstractly and become more and more what we would call natural from that. Here too, there is an accentuation of the structural, mathematical element, as we would expect, as is particularly evident in the sketches for unexecuted works. But we also find in the years when Moore was experimenting with abstract art that the purely feminine element is more in abeyance than at any other creative period. This is because the feminine, by reason of its archetypal nature, pertains to the world of the organic. Since for Moore, asymmetry is connected also with the desire for the organic, which I have, rather than the geometric, the geometry of nature is integrated into the organic only as a partial aspect of it. And skipping over here, he's talking about internal and external forms. And you remember from the slides last week, one of those sculptures where there's like a shell, and then there's another sculpture inside of it, internal and external forms. He's talking about one of those kinds of sculptures. In Moore's latest work, the problem of the mother-child relationship is no longer restricted to the head as the containing vessel. The body of the maternal container appears once more in its entirety and becomes the dominant theme for the 1951 sculpture, Working Model for Internal and External Form. The same principle of container and contained, mother and child, body and soul, which underlay the helmets. Remember those helmets, those early helmets with the antenna-like heads inside of them. Which underlay the helmets reappears on a large scale in the internal and external forms of 1952 and 53, and the latter large form of 1954 being the authentic representation of which the earlier miniature in bronze is only a sketch. What we see here is the mother bearing the still unborn child within her and holding the born child again in her embrace. Notice that the feminine archetypally has this mysterious movement of holding the unborn within the body and holding the born within an extension of her body, like in the arms later on. The nascent child is within the body. The born child is within the extended body. But the child in the extended body can grow and become independent organically. But the way in which the child got to the extended body was an abstraction from the inner body. The birth was an abstraction in a process procedural way. So that the born child, or birth as a phenomenon, is archetypally the abstract process. The conscious remembrance of that is the very essence of rebirth. The whole idea of rebirth is having made conscious to oneself that this is what occurred. Of looking back and remembering and understanding, this is how I got to be in this way. I was born. Now notice how mechanically skewed and psychically disturbed the whole concept of the early Viennese psychoanalytic concept that birth is a trauma. It misunderstands everything. Birth is not a trauma. It's not traumatic to be born. It is organically real to be born. What would be a trauma is if you weren't born. If the child didn't come out, that would be traumatic. That the child comes out is not traumatic. To understand that is traumatic means that one has got an inverted sense of life. To use their own language, those psychiatrists are anal retentive. Don't go to them, don't pay them. Do not pay your bills to people like that. Let them argue among themselves. You know, perish like the tigers around the tree where little black Sambo was and have turned into butter. What we see here is the mother bearing the still unborn child within her and then holding the born child again in her embrace. There's all the difference in the world between the child in the womb and the child in the arms. The child in the arms can become the man. The whole different reality here. Incidentally, the reason why a male child is usually portrayed is that the female child has an extra added dimension because it can be, she can be, become a mother in herself, and the mind in conceiving this particular idea, when it first occurs to one, runs the danger of infinite progression. And so the conception is always of a male child because it's like a semi-defense of the mind not to get involved in a further amplification of the idea of infinite progression. The child can be a daughter just as well, but it takes a higher humanity and level of consciousness to know that and recognize that, that the initial idea came as a male child, always comes as a male child, because of that particular limitation, because the fresh idea is already too powerful, and to add the further weight of infinite progression to it, one would cringe from it. One would not make the idea become manifest. It's not a sexist thing at all. It's just the kind of protection that, that the mind goes through. Limits ideas to bare essentials at first, and only later on flushes it out. This is why powerful ideas need to be refined. This is the whole thing. To let loose powerful ideas unrefined in the world is indeed a traumatic experience. I've been working on these ideas for over 20 years and could well have published books in the 1960s. But it would have been irresponsible because a lot of the refinements that have come have only come in the last 5 or 6 years. So, big deal. So you have to wait sometimes, long time. It's like a parent that has to wait 20 years before the child is even old enough to begin to pose possibilities. Or maybe 25 years. Or maybe 30 years before some children even begin to be themselves. It's a part of being what we used to call responsible parents. And letting loose powerful ideas before they're refined is one of the real dangers of civilization. They usually backfire, incidentally. Unrefined ideas usually manifest their negatives first. So instead of people having more capacity, they usually have more capacity for abuse. So the child in the arms is different from the child in the womb. But this child is a dweller within the body, the psyche itself, for which the body, like the world, is merely the circumambient space that shelters or casts out. It is no accident that this figure reminds us of those Egyptian sarcophagi in the form of mummies, showing the mother goddess as the sheltering womb that holds and contains the dead man like a child again as at the beginning. You probably are not following this intellectually as sharp as you need to, because you're lacking a technical bit of information. The Greek word sarcophagus means body eater. The material, the substance of the sarcophagus is limestone. And if you put a human body into limestone, the limestone eats away at the body, the flesh, the bones, and everything. There would be nothing left. It would be absorbed into the limestone eventually, after a long time. So the Greek term sarcophagus means body eater. Now, if the body eater is in the shape of the mummy, and the inside of the lid of the sarcophagus has the goddess Nut painted on it, her embrace dissolves you back again into her cosmic womb. Not just as a metaphysical idea, but physiologically the actual fact occurs. So there's the Egyptian sense. Notice that the Egyptian Hermetic sense is nth degree complete. It's not just dust to dust, but it's from womb back to womb again. There's no dust left even. I hope you can see and can appreciate that there's that when that happens, when it's from womb back to womb, that the idea of life is a closed circle of eternity. It's a closed circle of eternity. This is exactly the Egyptian idea. If you look at Egyptian religious symbols, one of the great symbols that's there is a circle with a line, a horizon, a base on the bottom of it. It's different from the Ankh, which is life. This other one is eternity. Life is quite permitted, but it is reabsorbed back into eternity. There's no way that life can occur outside of eternity, or can escape from eternity. The mythological cycle of this is the myth of the eternal return. And for someone locked into that, the most terrifying thing of all is history. Because history means that life is going on, and it's going on outside of the return back to eternity. It's going on in its own self. Life has been freed from the constraints of the eternal cycle, the short circle, almost said short circuit, of eternity has been abrogated by life breaking out. Now, the most archaic of all images of this in the Greek mind was the Orphic egg. The cosmos as an Orphic egg is the Egyptian idea of the eternal return brought into that image. And the Orphic egg usually, in its precise graphic presentation, had a world serpent wrapped around it. Mr. Hall, in his big book, and the Secret Teachings of All Ages, has a beautiful engraving in there of the classic Orphic egg. Or it can be presented as the world serpent swallowing the egg again. Different from that is life freeing itself from that cycle. Not having to go through that short circuit, but freeing itself to be what it is outside of that, being born out of the Orphic egg, being born out of the Egyptian eternity. Now the revolution in that is what Jesus did, is break out of the Egyptian Hermetic eternity. It is life eternal and not life being recycled back again into the same old gods of the old. You can appreciate what an incredible psychic energy it took to break out of that egg, which had been around for who knows how many thousands of years. is a very powerful symbolic way of making life real and not just a subservient phase of an eternal wombness, that a person begins in the womb and you're going to end in the cosmic womb and that's it. And whatever you have in between is gratis and complimentary of the house, but you don't own any of it. And the kind of personalities that get dominated by the mother end up in that kind of truncated short circuit. And it's a stuffy closet instead of the landscape of life. And it happens both for men or women. Doesn't make any difference. So you can see that Moore here is working with protean qualities of human existential challenges, but doing it in terms of his art. And that the key in this art is on one hand to take advantage of the abstract capacity, the capacity to abstract. Because if you didn't abstract, because it affects everything, there's no way that consciousness could work with it. You can't work with everything at once all the time. You have to have that capacity to see essences and principles and abstract it out and work with maquettes, as it were. And then you have to have the ability to translate, to transform that maquette, that abstraction, back into life, back into the organic, so that it develops in your life and not just in its closed circuit of eternal mythic qualities. Now you can see we're working with really powerful dynamite. We're working with the energies of reality. We're discursively working with the very energies of reality. And the projects that we're using are our tools to allow us to abstract these assignments, the sculptures, the haiku, the painting, the mask of a role. These are the tools that are allowing us now to abstract out of the psychic energy, our psychic energy, material ways in which, or media as they're called, ways in which to express for ourselves these ideas, these symbolic realizations, to exercise our consciousness, to establish for ourselves personal individuality vis-a-vis this collective unconscious static load of material, that if we consulted it basically in its own terms, doesn't have anything to say to us whatsoever. Whatever we would do would just be a ritual action in terms of its eternal drama. And there ain't, I have to use a little vulgarity, there ain't much compassion from the prospect of eternity about your personal problems today. Doesn't mean that much. Whereas, if the transformation is made and the individual is carrying the self energy in their life, then everything that happens to you is of concern to the universe. And your travails are not just the travails of you in an isolated life skit, but they're the concern of the whole cosmos. Everything cares about what happens to you and works with you as best can be for that basic organic process of manifesting the abstract idea into a life fulfillment. That's the whole cue right there. I guess I'm going to stop there, and we're going to get to some of the sculptures for a minute. But I've tried to tie a bow here. If it seems like a knot to you, please spring a few bucks for the cassettes. and listen to the cassettes and listen to them several times and see if it doesn't disclose the bow rather than the supposed knot. That bow is the free human personality that comes out of this. And it can be any color, it can be any size, it can be tied in any one of 8 million different knots, different ways of tying together. I have a book on Chinese knots that shows in incredible ways. The one I like is the Tibetan knot that's supposed to be the eternal knot. I like it because I like to hold it up with my own hand and say that I'm beyond that. Not egotistically, but conscientiously. That I too can tie that kind of knot if I want to, but I can tie all kinds of others. I can tie them even in such a way that if a child pulled on them, it would pull loose and the child would be able to tie its own. That is personal freedom. That's the basis for what we're working for. And whatever comes out of that, let it come out. I really don't, I don't have any druthers at all. So there's our material, and let's come to your sculptures. Let's just have a little bit of show and tell briefly, and then we'll move on. If you haven't submitted a haiku, submit a haiku. There are pages up there, so you have a collection of everybody's. Next week, we'll go to the haiku in Basho, and we'll see how the seed of the haiku in Basho gets developed in Euripides in the Bacchae. And I know that relating Basho and Euripides is a little unorthodox, but you got to give me some leeway. You got to cut me some slack. Let's see. Let's start with the hand. Let's start with Sylvie's hand. Who got that? Was that? Okay. Chris.
Maybe hold that up so we can all see.
I couldn't quite understand the nail at first. And so I just decided to live with it for a day or so. But the thing I did almost immediately, the nails had been put in random form. And then the wire had been strung through them, and I said, well, that won't do. So I pulled them out and put them in a circle, and I had an eighth, and then I had the ninth out on the edge. And then I just got this image in my mind of the ocean, and what I, my initial thought was to make waves and to actually make it look like the ocean, and that these, this form had come out of the ocean and connected up to this other element that you see. And then I thought about technology, about how to do it, and just started flying. And when I actually did it last night, putting the paint with the different colors and the different aspects and the nails brought a little life to it.
And you painted the nails various colors?
Yes, just because it had no life. The nails were sort of negative symbol. There were lots of pain and other things, and we had to transform that into something that was more life-giving and fun. And
so you gave them a kaleidoscopic color.
Right. And then when I actually made the waves or started making the bottom form, it really turned out to be a cloud when I got finished with it instead of an ocean. And
so you got rainbow nails out of a wood
so,
cloud.
So what happened is this instead of being sort of an earthy thing, it became sort of a heavenly thing.
Yeah.
And for some reason, I wanted to get to put something else on it, and I thought of different things I was going to do, including the little bookmark symbol that you have, and painting a little flower in there.
Yeah.
And I thought of that, and then I, for some reason, the key came out, and so I had an old skeleton key that I think I've been just added.
A skeleton key, which opens many locks.
Right, and we're all looking for the key and the lock, I guess. And
And these ribbons are like prize ribbons. Well, I'll tell you one thing. I have to say this. I'm extremely proud of you. You've been through this cycle before. And your consciousness is very high because you never once slipped to the automatic mythic thing of associating hands and nails and making crucifixion energy.
No, I got by that right away.
You worked with the artistic quality of it, and that, incidentally, is a freedom that you have.
The other thing I wanted to do, and the thing that was really a surprise to me when I finished it, is I had another whole scenario where I was going to put a structure over the top of it with something reaching down to it.
Uh-huh.
And then I said, this is already at that level, and it's already transcended that somehow, and to put anything above it was to diminish it. And this is about as far as you get in one sense. And I don't know what else would actually reach down to it.
Right. And for that reason, I'd like to abstract that work out put it here in the archive. That's not going to be worked on anymore because I want to save that particular phase for all of us because it's worth at this juncture of singling out and understanding the piece is worked with aesthetically, not mythically. And that was a tremendous leap in capacity. It doesn't abrogate the ability to work with it mythically, but it adds definitely the ability to work with it aesthetically. That is a gain in personality. I don't care what system you ordinate yourself with. That's a gain in personality. Let's go to this... looks like a Sanyo radio with a green blob on it. let's go to that. Sorry, friend, sorry.
This is a real tool. Well, you can't go to that if you've got to go to the bedroom of the order of my road. Maybe you've got me a note.
Yes.
Anyway.
But you've done it.
You have to go through my process. So if there's ever a problem, I went to Woolworths by an errand to when the window hadn't done my project. So I bought.
Wait a minute, you went too fast. You went to Woolworths to do what?
To buy an eyelash tool. This is all.
That's what I thought you said. Okay.
I remember that I hadn't done my project, so I bought some children's model, Revelation. A year ago, I would have had to have bought more expensive art than an errand budget. This is just fine now. It was just fine to do it and I felt like it worked. Notice while waiting in line at Woolworths, an Indian-looking woman with long braid all the way down the waist, the waiting in line with three brightly colored bath towels across her head. People were looking at her eyes. Asked the daughter-in-law when she was done, she didn't see dinner. Her daughter-in-law from Guatemala. I said to her daughter-in-law, who was just smiling and cute and almost angelically to her, I think it is wonderful that this is the institution is in our eyes. Her daughter-in-law smiled sweetly at her again. I felt very elated at the magnificence of the clearness of the human spirit. 14. This modern clay is such a green red gray ground, but then it played with the ground, and suddenly there was a snake. Not me, particularly fond of snake. I noticed how fine a place of the die was, even though we had a rattler on a tail. Looks at remaining red green and gray clay. Decided to make an apple. The tail looked a bit like a worm until I added a leaf. Then I was inspired to bring the happy snake green eyes to my feet. The whole thing seemed to work better when the snake encircled the apple partially with its tail, but it's still sitting in the bottle lot. 9 p.m. God and his green and sculpture. Sorry I can't remember the first today. I was determined not to alter the sculpture, so as I liked it quite well as it was. Had a heated to just wrap it in colored telephone with clock sticks to it, but Woolworths didn't have any room. But that was all right. No, I have great resistance to changing other people's forms. Remember the selfless creators who sell the balls are removable. Try to remove them in a clay plastic pack. Felt a ringing noise, almost shed tears. Didn't have any room to put down the children's clay and stuck everything back in place. Revelation. This is my reverence for other people's creation. They're being it. Still, the assignment was to change the form. This project. I looked at the sculpture. What did the sculpture represent to me? Someone's mind. And the balls were the small ball and seemed removable, I decided this mind just was quite firmly ensconced in a sleep. Of course, the leaves were all pleasant colors, and there were a few empty stages left to be filled up with. However, the sculpture was indeed quite set. I decided that the one small ball that was movable should be placed on the cutting spot of the empty cage, in the hopes that it might grow, move about, and not get stuck like a golf ball in the game when you move. Then, just to play havoc, I put an egg in the one floating empty space. I thought I felt Mason smile. The empty space was to get like a windmill. Then, just for mischief, I put a first big green piece. Anyway, I put a spreadsheet green piece in here, and it looks like a dot. And I put a round ball on the outside of it, just to throw the lines into complete chaos. I thought that would be funny. And it looks like a dice, and I thought life is like a roll of a dice.
Don, can you pass that sculpture around? Or hold it up for Chris? Just hold it up and pass it around.
Here it is.
So people can see it. Hold it and, swing it around while she reads.
Okay. And I put a clay ball, and just to find, put a round ball on its outside face. Dear me, I was playing havoc with a full mind. It looked a bit like a dice. Well, mind, I said, that's what life is, yes, the roll of a dice. I looked at the sculpture and thought how much it made me cry to have to alter it. So I took the gray clay and put three tears on, one for me, one for its creator, and one for the spirit of all the things in the universe that had to undergo change. Then I decided to make an eye by the tears. It looked good at first, but the more I worked with it, the less I liked it. Okay, I thought, maybe she likes change, so let the eye become a mushroom, or perhaps a tree. Yes, a tree. But it certainly was made me 1.5. Okay. Well, is it a tree or a woman cat? It's what you see, came the answer. And I think that was, I thought that's lovely. But it's a woman crying, the three tears are its nature, in the way I like the idea. Well, it's your original creator of sculpture. All my work is easily readable. I like the original very much, and so it's preferable to appreciate other people's creations rather than alter them. Still, I did have a lovely imaginative time. Final conclusion. I don't think what I did improved the sculpture visually. I rather think that what I did accomplish was a quite lovely original. But I do wonder if nature itself must not have sophisticated. It's been my experience, and it was only in the shape of my mind that I got it too set, and she also had such a difficult time in the way of compassion. And I thought it was a balance.
I wish for you that Louis Buñuel would find that you're an actress. He has room for you in his next picture, I'm sure. Let's go to the lavender cylinder. Who had that? Oh, all right.
Before I called it, and when I received it, I had a flash right away, and I knew that I was going to do it. It came out a little differently. I had fixed it. Before I go on, though, I would really like Chris to comment on it, because I felt
that's
it's his feeling as well. So I'd like him to comment.
That's fair, sure.
After what I said, that you did everything external to it. You didn't go into it. And the whole piece.
Why are you surprised? Tell her why. There's a reason for that statement. That you took particular care with the inside of that sculpture. You loaded it with a personal little trick of consciousness, which she sidestepped adroitly.
Right.
And so your annoyance is with her adroitness.
Well,
no, I respect. No, wait a minute. No, I really respect that.
She's leaving.
He's gonna tap it.
Now, what I respect about this process is because 2 years ago, or 3 years ago, 3.5 years ago, when we did the first master summit, I had the same kind of reactive response of not wanting to.
You had a reactive response, but not a recursive response.
Right.
Recursive means it's a conscious. Yeah.
I mean, I was conscious of what I was doing at the time.
But you were conscious of the emotional structure,
and the need to,
which is reactive.
Straight away, but
right.
But it's very interesting, and it's very, what I was noticing before was the relationship of what this one is and that. When you made and what you did with this one, it tells me about where you are at a certain extent. But both of them are very open, cosmological, they're very expansive, and without any judgment about it, it's just interesting that the planetary symbolism in it and the ethereal space-like imagery in that one.
Are you calling her a science fiction lady?
No, I didn't say that.
Okay.
But
you're sensing a cosmic openness.
Yes, but I really like the way that she was containing the form and the fact that she was such a smaller form object. That is something about being on a threshold on two sides of a veil. It would take me a while to understand this process.
We need to bring in the stool from the kitchen and set the sculpture higher. It's a little bit too low. There's an aspect here that needs to be disclosed. If it's up a little higher, it should be about level with our eyes. That's good. Yeah. I believe it will balance in there. And then turn it 90 degrees. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now we've learned something about sculpture just now, that its presentation is a part of its nature. Okay? Go ahead. Well, finish though. You've got one more sentence in there that has to come out. The conclusion, the coda. You've left your comments open to mirror the sculpture, but she was asking for an appraisal or deeper judgment from you about what has happened to us, and she has a right to hear that. Like.
Now I guess what I would like to see happen is to take that beautiful reflection that relative to cold must be and put it into a rich form that we all need to see.
Well, when I first received it, I saw a monster splitting apart. It seemed so perfect, just too perfect. And I right away saw a sphere with rocks, and then another one with sand. And but then when I went to do it, it came out differently. And I left your piece sphere there to the very last, and I thought, the piece is so perfect. Or you gave me that, you know, a feeling that you didn't really want anybody to maybe do something with it. I don't know. I got that feeling. So I left it there, but at one point I was going to just touch the whole